Good morning. My name is Shira, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the ETL's first quarter 2014 results conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Carlos Freitas, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone. This is Carlos Freitas. I'm the CFO of ETL. Thank you for joining us in our investors conference call for this quarter to discuss our results. Here with me are Bernadette Infante, the deputy CFO of the company, and Marcelo Munoz, our investor relations officer. Our CEO, Luis Verdain, has apologized for not being here. As you probably know, he has been invited, like other players of the sector, for a big meeting today with the Minister of Energy. And he's right now there at this meeting, so he cannot be here with us. So I will now refer to our presentation that we distributed last night for you. And I hope you have this in front of you. If you don't, please download it from our investor relations page, www.ecl.es. If you now jump to page 3, so that we can have the big highlights of this quarter, I will say that we have a very good one. Our first quarter 2014 EBITDA with $80 million. Which was a 20% improvement compared to the first quarter of last year. This was basically due to a better operating performance of our coal-fired plants, as well as higher average realized prices both to regulated and unregulated clients. Likewise, our net income has improved quite a lot, a 49% improvement over the numbers of the first quarter of last year, and reached $25 million. So this was not only due to the improved EBITDA, as I just explained, but also because of lower depreciation costs that we had during this quarter. And the third bullet of slide number 3 showed that the net debt decreased by 2% over the last 12 months, so comparing the first quarter of this year with the first quarter of last year. Despite this intensive investment program that we have in the last 12 months, we managed to extend the useful life of some coal plants and some gas-fired plants as well. And with this, we managed to reduce our burden, our cost for depreciation in this last quarter. If we now move to page 4, another important highlight for this quarter is, as you know, there was a big earthquake in the north of the country in the beginning of April. Luckily, with no casualties and no injuries amongst our personnel, nor with any material damage among our plants and our transmission assets. So there were a big earthquake, followed by a second big earthquake as well in the following day. But luckily, our personnel and our facilities are fine. You also know that there was a draft tax reform bill sent to the Congress in early April of this year, which is still on discussion, still to be voted by the Congress, but if approved, would certainly impact ETL. This would readily increase the corporate income tax rate from the current 20% to 25% over the next 3 to 4 years, as well as introduce the so-called green taxes, or the CO2 taxes, for example, that are proposed at $5 per ton of CO2 starting in 2 years from now, among other relevant changes. So we are right now still studying the impact of ETL, especially because it's still a draft bill. The third comment on this page is a good one. We've managed to sign the agreement with Cobra. Cobra was the EPC contractor for the CTA and CTH power plants that were built 2 years ago. There were a number of failing issues with Cobra, and we signed this agreement with them, and we managed to issue this final acceptance certificate with a two-cover, and with this, we registered a net effect on our books of $5 million and effect of EBITDA of $6 million, also affecting our revenue. Going forward, you also know that in January of this year, we signed the EPC contract for the construction of a new line to connect the stick and the sink with, and I'm going to go further on this later on. And finally, the last bullet on this page refers to the Calama wind farm work that we have up to 228 megawatts that we are happy to announce that it has just been registered with the CDM mechanism of the United Nations. So it is so far one of the biggest CER potential projects in the country, which has a capacity of more than 500,000 tons per year. So we are still developing this wind farm project, but we are happy to announce that this wind farm has already been registered with the CDM. So if we move forward to page 6, just to give you an overview of the Chilean power sector in the first quarter, we have seen a growth last year of 4% in the overall demand of power in the state, but the forecast for the next 10 years is a growth of more than 6%. These are the growth numbers that are forecasted by the CNE in their latest study for fixing the tariffs of this new company. As you know, the power sector in the north of the country is basically a mining one, so only 12% of the power sector is to distribution companies, and these clients are ECS ones, so we are the only company with clients that are regulated in the north of the country, and which account for 12% of the market and more or less 20% of our sales. And we are today in the same, we have more or less 50% of the market in full capacity. This represents more or less 60% in sales in the north of the country, which is, I would say, a kind of a small market. The peak demand in the north of the country is 2,200 megawatts only, which is less than 30% of the demand in the peak. That's why you have the intention of going south, of going to the sea. And if we manage to do so, and we think we will, we are going to be, I would say, diluted to 12% into a bigger market. So today, ECL has 6% of a small market, and we will go to, I would say, 12% of sales into a big market. And finally, as you know as well, we have basically a coal market in the north of the country. If we move to slide 7, just a few remarks, just as a reminder. So in the north of the country, we have no exposure to hydro risk, and we have basically coal-fired generation and some gas as well. We have long-term contracts, as I said, more or less 80% with mining companies and 20% with ML. And this provides us with flexibility to negotiate price and conditions and supply terms. And here you can also see the evolution of the generation and the spot prices in the north of the country. So today, the spot prices are much more controlled, or between 70 and 80 or $90 per megawatt hour, and which a much higher gas generation than 2 or 3 years ago. Together with increase in the coal capacity, the generation, this allows for better, I'll say, cost bracket and a more balanced system in the north of the country. While in the peak, as you know, the spot prices are much higher and there are much more opportunities for growth. That's why we are going to the peak. If we move to slide 8, this is just a small list of mining projects that so far have not contracted their power supply. And this is just to illustrate that the Chilean power sector in the north and especially in, but throughout the country is still growing in spite of the decrease in the growth of the mining demand. We still see that the cash cost for the mining activities in the country is still pretty low. The demand for power is increasing. There's more and more demand for water, for pumped water and desalted water brought from the sea to the mining business. So this is increasing the demand for power, and this provides us with the security that our clients will increase more and more their demand in the north of the country and throughout the country. So now moving to page 9, here there are two relevant changes in this page. The first one is that here in the box in the right, you see that Minnesota Eje del Norte, that stamp that our line that we bought from EDS West. This is the proof that we as ETL and GDF have developed for more than 15 years in the country. It was stopped several years ago, and then 2 or 3 years ago, when we realized that the market was changing, this proof was put back to on track. And to streamline our organization and to send a message that we are the investment vehicle for the power sector in Chile, we, ETL, we acquired this company from DGFA in the beginning of this year. So today, ETL holds 100% of this company. And what you don't see here anymore is this Synor. Synor was the company that we sold at the end of last year, which was a small gas distribution business, that accounted for $1 to $3 million per year at the beginning, and at the end it was not part of our core business. So we sold this company to DDS Waves, which has a gas retail or gas distribution business in Chile. And here you see the ownership structure. So DDS Waves is the controlling shareholder with 53%. The biggest utility in the world with a strong A rating. And the remaining 47% is spread among pension funds in Chile and foreign institutions and local investors. So moving to page 10, this is just an illustration that you know already, that we are by far the biggest player in the north of the country, in the sea. And we have basically 1,200 megawatts in coal, which provides us with the backbone of our generation. And finally, in slide 11, on top of the facilities to generate energy, you should know as well that we have more or less 2,300 kilometers of high voltage line in the north of the country. We have the gas pipeline from Argentina, we have a port in Tocopilla, we have backup units, so we have, a pretty diversified portfolio of assets, not only generation, but also transmission and other supporting assets. So now going to the numbers for the quarter itself, in page 12, you see here the evolution of our PPA portfolio balance. And we have a balanced portfolio. Here you see that in the left line, we have today 93% of our contractable capacity already contracted. And this evolves to 99, 97, and 90% over time. So our approach is to work based on a contracted portfolio of clients. We have today 93% of contracted portfolio, not because we cannot contract more, but because we this year the line gas megawatt net we have this year more or less 41 equivalent megawatts of gas generation, because this year we completed one more LNG boat. And we have done so to minimize the so-called overcost in the system. So we don't intend to increase our generation portfolio this year. What we did is that we have one more boat of LNG this year to minimize the overall overcost in the thing as a whole. And we may repeat this approach next year. And so far it has proven a good idea. So we have been able to maximize our margins with it. So in a nutshell, I would say that this our approach is to work based on a competitive portfolio. There are some, most of our PPAs provide with pass-through provision to pass to the client some marginal cost exposure and maintenance risk exposure, so the client are paying the burden of marginal cost when, for example, we have one of our plants in maintenance, in anticipated maintenance, I would say. So when you see the spot purchases and spot sales that we have, just take into account that part of our exposure is passed through to the client through tariff. At the end, that's why we set this information saying that our exposure this year is only 93% and 99% next year. And we have a long-term PPA, more or less today. Our remaining average life of PPA is 10 years, solely with very good clients, with Codelco, with BHP, with Miguel Esperanza. We have the ML, triple B rated clients as well, as I said. So we have this, I would say, conservative approach to work based on long-term PPAs with solid clients. And now moving to page 13. Our this provides with the overall indexation that's applicable for our portfolio of PPAs. So on average, more or less 6% of our PPAs are indexed to coal, and more or less 21% is indexed to gas. So you see that of our generation, of our fuel that we burn, more or less 1/4 is indexed to gas, and 3/4 indexed to coal. And this tends to replicate more or less what we indeed burn. So our revenues are matched to our costs. If you see that we have on average 80% of our generation in coal and 20% in gas and some in diesel as well. So this tends to replicate our indexation in revenue. So because we tend to have a pretty foreseeable margin. And if you move to page 14, this provides more information on indexation of the MLPA, which is public, which is 40% indexed in energy to the US CPI and 6% indexed to Henry Hub. Here you see the lines here for the ML tariff, the average monthly tariff, the Henry Hub applicable for ML, etc. So you see here that there is always a lag time effect between the cost that we have when we buy and burn gas, and when this is effectively reflected in the tariff of ML. So there is a 3 to 6 month delay period for the Henry Hub prices to be reflected into the ML tariff. So just for you to know that when sometimes we report higher or lower margins for ML, it should be taken into account into a bigger picture with a more long-term approach. Now moving forward to slide 15, this is just an illustration of how our portfolio of plants performed regarding their cost. In the first quarter of the year, our average fuel and electricity purchase cost per megawatt hour sold was $65 per megawatt hour, while our average non-price sold was $115 per megawatt hour. So here we have $60 per megawatt hour of gross margin, which I'll say is a pretty good one. And now to talk about the overcost in the system in slide 16. So as you probably know, the overcosts, they are generated when more expensive trains are dispatched for some technical reason, such as, for example, when units are that cannot operate below a certain technical minimum level. So, for example, the plant of Gas Takama, they need to dispatch no less than 150 megawatts. So even if there's an increase in demand for 30 or 40 megawatts, you have to dispatch the full unit of Gas Takama. So this produce, I'll say, inefficient costs as a whole for the whole system in the city, and these are paid rather to the portfolio of each company in the city. So because ECL has more than 6% of the market, we pay 6% of the overcost. But luckily, most of this overcost we can set through to clients. So in a nutshell, more or less, we can pass through to clients more or less 25%. Sorry, but we cannot pass through to clients more or less 75%. So our burden is 25% of the overcost. So now moving to slide 17. Here, we're going to give you some information about the story. So in 18, the biggest one, which is IBM, we have developed quite for a long time now. Those are two plants, each one for 375 megawatts. And that's two new coal-fired plants for which we already have the environmental license obtained. We have the EPC contract in place. We have negotiations with clients. We have, I would say, the so-called social permits as well, because we have been operating in the union for years, and we believe that we have the capacity to effectively develop this power plant, which is kind of a brownfield, there in the site of main unit. It's an extension to some plants that we have already. And we have been able to develop a good relationship with the community in main unit, so that we are confident that we have this so-called social permit. So far, we have not been able to find long-term fees that will trigger the construction of the solar plant, and we will start construction once we indeed have sufficient fees signed in the long term, either in the SIN or in the SIC. So that's why the line connecting SIC and SIC is so important. So now talking about the line in page 19, as I said earlier, ECL acquired this company from VDS Wood. This is the line that will connect Medellin to Copiapó. You probably know that we have already announced and sent a letter to the CNE that, and to the FedEx that we are going to disconnect one of our gas-fired plants in Medellin from the sea and connect to the sea. So the CPM3 power plant, in 3 years from now, be disconnected from the sea and will be connected to the sea through this line. And we, so far this line is a private initiative, but we believe that this line meets all the conditions to be considered in the near future part of the trans system of the country. So far it is not, as you probably know, the studies are still going on, but we believe that this has the conditions to become so. And we have, I'll say, an advanced stage for this line. We have already the environmental permit, and we have advanced easement process negotiation. So the big numbers about this line in stage 20, this is going to be a double circuit, 500 kilovolts, in alternate circuit, current circuit, for up to 1500 MVA and almost 600 kilometers. So with this operation, the total capex would amount to more or less $700 million. And we have already signed an EPC contract with ANUSA, and based on equipment to be provided by Alstom. This was signed in January, and we had already issued the NTP, the notice to proceed, for the early work and for the detailed engineering work that was given in January of this year. So for this line, we intend to have a partner. It's not our intention to remain as 100% owner of this company. So we are today starting an active process to get a partner on board, which would take 50% of the company. But at the end, our intention is that this company, this investment, is not consolidated within our benefits. That we do intend to use our leverage capacity and our benefits to our core, with the generation. This line is important for us, because this line is a way to get to the peak, and that's why we intend to remain with 50% stake into this line in the future, at least during the construction. But what we do not intend to do is to consume relevant space in our balance sheet for this line. And because of this line being developed today, we are shutting this process to search for a partner. So now moving to slide 21, about Eléctrica Monte Redondo, the professional position of this company. This is a company that today operates in the 8th region of the country, with the Laja, and in the north of Chico, with the wind farm called Monte Redondo. So a 48 megawatt wind farm in operation now for 2 years. And a small hydro plant for 34 megawatts, Laja, still under construction. And we have stated already that we have the intention to acquire this company and this is the intention to sell this company to ETL, but only once the Laja plant is fully commissioned and tested. Today is not the case yet. So once it is the case, we are going to probably have the process, our plan, subject, of course, to all the corporate transparency standards that we have throughout the world of this, in which a committed directorate, a committee of independent board members, would lead the studies and would lead, I'll say, the negotiations with the seller for this position. So far, on this, there is nothing. We are not working on this right now. But we may start to work on this once the Laja plan is commissioned. And this is going to provide us with an opportunity to expand into renewables and to expand into the city. So for us, it's a very interesting opportunity. Of course, to be evaluated by the independent board of directors. In page 22, some brief information about our follow-up first. We believe that we have the operational and commercial skills to become a leading player in the country. We have transmission capacity, we have commercial skills, we have been in the north of the country for almost 100 years. So we, last year, we started the creation of a small pilot project called El Águila 1. For only 2 megas, which has been working pretty well. And today we have 2 new plants that are ready to start. One is Santa Amarones, that we already have the environmental permit, and which we are about to start. We are just waiting for some initial regarding the land. And the second one is El Águila 2 for 34 megawatts. The total capex of around $80 million, and we are negotiating PPA to be backed by this power plant. So these are our first steps into solar power. Solar power has become more economic in the north of the country. It's one of the best places in the world for installation. So we are convinced that we can become a relevant player in the country for solar. Finally, on page 23, we have invested a lot in environmental capex. We have so far, between 2011 to 2013, invested $145 million in emission reduction equipment to reduce the emission of NOx and SOx and particulate matter. This is part of our big step that we took 3 years ago, not only to comply with the regulation, but to show that we really invest in CapEx to reduce this type of emissions. So we have still more or less $15 million to invest for this CapEx, but we have done so in advance of the regulation. So we were ready with the emissions before the deadline provided by the government. And finally, in page 24, there's some illustrations of our sustainability and innovation culture for the COVIA project in the US to use warm water from our production. The solar that I mentioned, the wind farm in Kalamua, we have the microalgae project to provide biomass for our coal fire plant as well. So we are committed to continuous social and environmental improvement into our community. So finally, on page 25, some big numbers about the CAPEX program, or the food CAPEX program. Here you see the $50 million for the environmental work that I mentioned that we still have remained for the last 9 months of this year. So more or less $100 million, $120 or $30 million for a year in normal capex, which includes the two small solar plants and some other minor developments and early developments of the medical groups such as IEM and Kalama, and as well as the price phase for the position of 10 from GDSS. If we move now to page 27, about the financial results of the quarter, there was a small decrease in the electricity sales from one quarter to the other. Basically, this quarter compared to the last one, especially in the mine activities, there were a number of clients that reduced their demand for power for some specific operational issues that we expect that tend to be solved. And we provided with the opportunity to increase our spot sales in the same. You can see here that our monomer prices evolution in the chart in the bottom right part of the slide. You see here that in the past our prices were 3 years ago were pretty high because we were taxed by higher fuel prices. As fuel prices went down, basically in coal, our price also reduced. But you see that in the last 6 months, our price have increased a bit. And today, that's why our average price today is $115 per megawatt hour. So we see here a positive figure for this quarter. Moving now to page 28. The big number for income statement. The total operating revenues increased by 80%. This is a combination of factors. On the negative side, as I said, there was a 6% decrease in physical sales, not only to lower demand from certain mining clients, but also for the maturing PPA. We had, as you know, the month of the blank was PPA that ended in September of last year, and the PPA was not renewed, so we have today a better selling of our portfolio. and as a consequence, we have the 6% decrease in sales. On the other hand, there was a 5% increase in average prices, explained by higher handheld prices, the increased spot sales that I just mentioned, and take-or-pay provisions in certain PPAs. And the third bullet here is the settlement, the payment made by Cobra, which impacted the results, revenue, in $6 million. And that, I would say, that's the non-recurrent effect for revenue for this quarter. Regarding EBITDA jumped 20% as a result of two main factors. On the negative side, the heavier overcost as a whole, despite the fact that we have one more vote of that for this year, the overcost as a whole also was a bit higher than the first quarter of last year, which was also reflected in higher opportunity purchase costs. And on the other hand, we had better margins this quarter. We had the better operating performance of our CTA and CTH power plants. As you remember, in the first quarter of last year, these two power plants were out for more than 3 weeks. And we had a better performance in the gas sales as well this quarter. So if you move to page 29, you see here the EBITDA comparison, the bridge of the EBITDA between the first quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year. So as I explained, this $13 million increase, a big chunk of this was the improved margin for $10 million more or less. The spot sales also with $4 million and the settlement with Cobra for $6 million. Which was compensated by the volume effect, the reduced in the gigawatt hours sold to existing clients or to maturity of PPA, and some other effects. So these all factors combined, they account for an increase of $13 million in our PPA for this quarter. And now moving to page 30 to start talking about the results, we just a reminder of two initiatives that we took last year to streamline our business and address sales costs. The first one was the restructuring of the Northern Bindo pipeline from Argentina, which was signed in October, that we reached an agreement with PGN in Argentina, through which several contracts with PGN were renegotiated. So we made an advance payment to them to $15 million, which was not impacting ABGA. But with this, we managed to scale down our operations in Argentina, and this will be translated into better ABGA and lower costs, as from May of this year, so as from next week, of around $1 million, per month. This is an average number. Sometimes it can be a bit lower, a bit higher. But on average, $1 million per month as from May of this year. And as a consequence, we had, at December of last year, an impairment impact of $11 million. The second one is Signor that I just mentioned, that was done to focus on our core power business. And we had a positive one-time income impact of $10 million in December of last year as well. Now, if these are just reminders. So if we move now to page 31, this is the bridge for the net income first quarter compared to the first quarter of last year. The important improvement here in net income as well. So $11 million of EBITDA improvement as expected. We have lower depreciation costs for $2 million this year, basically for the extension of the useful life of some facilities. And I would say a negative FX difference this quarter, because we had a positive $2 million effect in the first quarter of last year. So in a comparison of last year, we have a negative $2 million this quarter. So our net results increased to $25 million. Finally, move to page 32. Available cash decreased a bit to $205 million, but it's still pretty comfortable. Our net debt to EBITDA decreased to 2.1, so which provides us with leverage capacity to increase our business. And last 12 months EBITDA over gross interest expense improved to 5.7. And to page to go to page 33 to talk about debt. So our debt remains flat at $758 million, based long term, basically fixed, all in dollars, so aligned to the currency of the company. And you can hear that we have a, I'll say, pretty smooth profile of debt, with good liquidity, with no debt maturity in short run, and only dollars, only debt in dollars. In page 34, just the net debt evolution, throughout this last quarter, so the first quarter of 2014, you see here a small increase in the debt between December 2013 and March 2014, an increase of around $15 million, 3%. So we had $22 million of capex, more VAT payment, income tax payment, the buyout of TEM for $13.7 million, and which was compensated by the proceeds that we got from Cobra, which amounted to $9 million, although the EBITDA impact was only 6, and a strong cash flow generation from our operation of $43 million. Now moving to page 35, business, we have a payout ratio of 100% in the last 2 years, so this year and last year. As you know, yesterday the meeting of shareholders approved the payout for the results of last year of $39.6 million, which is 100% payout, which we paid in May, at 23 of May of this year. And what's new is that we also approved yesterday a new dividend policy, which means that we intend to pay dividends 3 times per year. So that we intend to have 2 provisional dividends in August, September. So ideally approved in August and paid September, and then approved in September and paid in January. Plus the definitive dividend, the usual one, to be paid in May. So the guidance for dividend payment is still the same. So we will, of course, pay no less than 30%, which is the minimum required by law. We can pay more when we think that we have the commitment to pay more. So, for example, when there's enough liquidity and there's not enough cash consumption by work, which was the case in the last 2 years. That's why we pay 100%. But when we do have more capex, we reduce our business. So this is going to be evaluated year by year. But at least now we are giving the signal that we intend to pay the dividend 3 times per year. Finally, going to the last page of this presentation, in slide 36, just a reminder of our strong rating. Our rating is BBB by S&P, which was improved from -3 in December of last year, and with Fitch, BBB minus, but with a positive outlook, which was given in August of last year. So that was the end of this presentation. So now I refer back to the operator for the questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star followed by the number 1. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Ezequiel Fernandez.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Congratulations on the results. I wanted to ask you 3 questions. The first one is related to the emission taxes. If they are approved as currently proposed, how confident would you feel about being able to pass the tax cost in 2018 to the existing clients? If it should be automatic, or if it should trigger some litigation or negotiations. The second question is, you're going to pay 100% dividend ratio in 2014 related to the 2013 earnings. Do you see no cash needs for the Monterredondo Laja operation? How do you intend to finance, or should it be left for 2015? And the third one is on the gas sales to AES Gener. Could you explain a bit why this opportunity appeared and if we should expect it to repeat in future quarters? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger, for your question. Let me start by the first one. The emission question for the test plan, we are pretty confident that we are going to test to most of this cost supply. We already have provisions in most of our PPA that allow for this test too. And for most of our mining PPA, the ML1 does not have this type of provision. But for most of our PPA, and for all of the new PPAs, they have this type of provision. So as we renew PPAs, as we renew old PPAs, the percentage of pass-through is going to increase. What we do estimate is that today, in 2017, we can pass-through more or less 70% to clients. And 2018 onwards, this can increase to more or less 80% of pass-through
percentage.
That's right, yeah,
thank you.
So this is our we're pretty confident on this question. The second question about dividend versus cash needs. Today we don't anticipate that it's gonna be a big issue in paying the $4 million dividend compared to our existing provision of cash. And we don't anticipate either that the capex requirements for the new solar plant, if we manage to buy Monterredondo this year, we have a pretty conservative policy, and we don't take big risk regarding financing policy. So, for example, if and when we start negotiations with EDF for the buyout of Monterredondo, for example, the financing of this transaction will be discussed at the time, but this will be done in a way that does not jeopardize our ability to finance our risk. That's what can be said so far.
Okay, great, thank you.
And the third one, gas sales. We have sold gas in the past to the client, and we are taking things right now. This quarter we sold to Hendrix. We in the past we sold to Endesa. We sell gas as well to Solgas, a corporate provider that keeps gas in the north of the country as well. So we have a portfolio of shipments of LNG. We have either long-term LNG contract or short-term one. And those are, I would say, assets of the company that we can either burn to generate power, or when we anticipate a better margin, we can sell to third parties, such as Enel this quarter, such as Endesa in the past, such as Solgas. So, and you see that we have this quarter is $11 million in gas sales, and this is not only for energy that is part of it, but we have clients as a whole that we sell gas. But going forward, we anticipate that we can continue to sell gas. Every time that selling gas to third parties provides us with better margin than importing gas.
Okay, that's very useful. Thank you very much.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. And at this time, there are no further questions.
Well,
thank you, everybody, for your attendance on this call. And we remain open to any further questions that you may have. And thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. 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 Disconnect your lines.